The Tom Woods Show, episode 2274.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, chances are if you're listening to this podcast, you are surrounded by irrational, panicked people who think you're a terrible person because you don't want to lock everybody in their houses. No amount of reasoning appears to accomplish anything. And not to mention the media has done nothing but stoke fear and failed to provide context. Well, one of the many benefits you get as a supporter of The Tom Woods Show is membership inside The Tom Woods Show Elite. Recently migrated off Facebook, so if that was holding you back, no longer. This group will keep you sane and informed, and as an added bonus, it won't accuse you of wanting to kill your grandmother. Join me in there at supportinglisteners.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm delighted to be joined by two guests who have appeared on the program previously, but who may see things a little bit differently right now in terms of what the best moves are with our money, given the current circumstances. And I'm talking about first Mark Skousen, who's written, it seems like, every book that's ever been written. He's got a huge, huge collection of books. He is the publisher of the Forecasts and Strategies newsletter, which I believe is now entering its 43rd year. He's also a professor at Chapman University. He's taught at numerous other places, including Columbia Business School. I also have with us John Wolfenbarger, whom you've heard on this program before, and you can find out what he's been writing and talking about when you head to his website at bullandbearprofits.com. So welcome to both of you gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
What I want to do at the beginning, because this isn't a debate per se, but rather a conversation, is maybe give each of you a few minutes individually to situate us in current conditions, in, let's say, maybe how you've, over the past, I don't know, year or more recently, modified your investment strategy and where you think the future is going to take us, let's say, in the short run. So, Mark, why don't you go first?
So, yeah, and I spent some time on John's website and looking over his investment strategy. And it looked like he was heavily shorting the market last year. And I have listened to his outlook, which is pretty bearish. And in fact, predicting that the markets could crash or a major financial crisis where we're headed, where the negative returns could be worse than 2008-09. I'm not as pessimistic as he is. However, I have been in the past year rather defensive in my strategy. And one of the great sayings on Wall Street is by the late Dick Russell, who said, in a bear market, the winner is who loses the least. And I've kind of taken that as approach. I've never really been very successful at shorting the markets. I've tried it a number of times in my short-term trading services and not been very successful, because another saying on Wall Street, the stock market takes the stairs up and the elevator down. And these bear markets are usually pretty treacherous and they're really hard to catch from my perspective. So I tend to be long-term bullish. If you look at the long-term trends of the U.S. stock market, 2 out of every 3 days on average, the market is up, not down. So if you're going to be shorting the market, you need to be pretty sharp and trying to figure out when the market is going to start tanking. So instead, I've been investing in very conservative investments, not cash. I have had a small cash position, like 20% in 2022. And then I invest in dividend paying stocks, especially companies that have rising dividend policies. And last year, I had several investments. And Tom, you are aware of these as a subscriber to my newsletter, stocks that increased their dividends in 2022. And that's a very positive sign. Not that I can't lose money in these kind of deals, but it cushions the fall when the markets drop. Like oil and gas. So we did very well last year. We had a 20% gain in our oil and gas position. And in a financial stock that did really well, we have a gold position, because I think gold is a good hedge against uncertainty and inflation. And we actually broke even in our gold position last year. So those are some of the things that we did. But my portfolio was down a bit, but not as much as the market. So I kind of fit the Dick Russell trying to minimize my losses and then be fully invested when the market turns around. So we've outperformed the market very strongly in 2023, and the January effect is in full place. And traditionally, the year after the midterms has been the best performing market during the presidential cycle. However, I do think there are headwinds out there that John accurately portrays, and I do admire John's focus as an Austrian trying to apply Austrian economics, which I try to do as well. And we do have an inverted yield curve, which the yield curve is the Austrian perspective on the structure of interest rates. It's very important. And corporate profit earnings estimates are now coming down. There's a lot of issues. The money supply is not growing. All of these John points out on his website, which I totally agree with. And I'm really glad he emphasized the business indicators, because consumer spending and retail sales are not very good indicators of where the market is headed, in my opinion. So both of us agree on looking at business indicators. And it does seem to show that we're headed for a recession. I just think for a number of reasons, I don't think it's as bad as he's portraying it. Just as one example, a big difference between 2008 and the current situation is that a lot of the major corporations have done a good job of building a strong cash position and a strong balance sheet. I mean, if you look at Apple and Microsoft and Google and Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's firm and so on, they have huge amounts of cash that they did not have in the financial crisis of 2008. So they learned from that, and I think we're in a much better shape to weather a recession. So that's why I'm more optimistic than he is about where we're headed.
John, your turn.
Okay, great. Well, I have to say most of what I've learned from Mark Skousen over the years, including from his excellent books, most of which I've read. I particularly love The Structure of Production, which was just brilliant, and from his excellent investment newsletter. So I can't say I disagree with Mark on many things, but I will say, to make this show more interesting, I am pretty worried that there's a lot more downside to go in the stock market. And I think risk assets in general, including cryptocurrencies and commodities. So just a couple of things. I think historically the stock market has done, you know, extremely well in the US at least, you know, generating 10% or so annual returns. But if you look over a long period of time, but if you break up the returns by 10 years or so or 15 years or so, you can have very divergent returns. And that depends on the starting valuation level of the stock market. And one of the best indicators of the stock market's valuation is if you take the total value of all stocks and divide by US GDP, that's a Warren Buffett's favorite valuation indicator. And that indicator actually historically over the past 100 years or so has predicted the next 10 or 12 year annual returns to the stock market with about 90% accuracy or so, which is a lot. You know, there's never 100% certainty in anything with investing, but 90% is pretty good. And in 1929 peaks and the 2000 peak, this metric was at pretty similar levels. So those were the two prior all-time highs in this metric. A year ago, at the beginning of 2022, at the stock market peak, this valuation level had risen to an all-time new high. So quite a bit higher than both 1929 and 2000. And based on that valuation metric, it said that the stock market would probably be in 12 years with about 90% accuracy, probably at least 40 or 50% lower than at that high in 2022, early 2022. The stock market has come down a bit since then over the past year. And right now, the stock market is probably going to be about flat in 12 years. So no return, although that includes dividends. So if you take out dividends, the S&P 500 will probably be about 20% lower than it is now. So I think that's a long time. 12 years is a long time in most mortals' lives. You know, not everybody has 100 years to invest. And people forget that stocks and really any asset can decline for years and even decades. It took 25 years for stocks to recover to the 1929 peak. It took about 15 years to recover to the 2000 peak. Gold was down for 20 years. It took 27 years for gold to return to the 1980 peak. The Japanese stock market's 30% lower than it was in 1989. So my big concern is really this all-time high valuation level. And when you combine all-time high valuation level with a recession, which I think I'm strongly convinced we are heading into now, you combine that and you also have the Fed still tightening, you know, still raising interest rates. Remember in the early 2000s and 2008, 2009, bear markets and recessions, the Fed was already slashing interest rates before those bear markets or recessions really started. And now the Fed is still tightening into what is obviously going to be a recession. I think we have an inverted yield curve. We have money supply down year over year. We have leading indicators by the Conference Board, leading indicators at levels only seen during recessions. ECRI, one of the leading forecasting firms, is predicting recession. Every time the S&P 500 has fallen as much as it has over the past year, for as long as it has, we've had a recession. Real GDP was just reported today. For the latest quarter, it grew 1% year over year. It actually never went negative in the early 2000s recession, and it was growing about 1.5% in the first half of the Great Recession, which you explained so well in your book, Tom, Meltdown. So anyway, we have, I think, a lot of indicators that really we only see during a recession. I think a recession's probably already started in the US, and we have these all-time high valuation levels. We have the Fed still tightening, and the Fed has to keep tightening because you recall they lost a lot of credibility last year when they said inflation would be transitory. You know, they increased the money supply by 40% after COVID, and they said, oh, inflation will be transitory. And they lost a lot of credibility. And all the Fed has is credibility on Wall Street. And when they lose that, then they lose control of the bond market. And if they lose control of the bond market, you have a major fiscal crisis for the government. Debt levels are higher now than they were in 2008, both private sector and public sector. At current interest rates, interest expense will already exceed all the spending on national defense. If interest rates rise to 5%, then interest expense will be $1.2 trillion more than we spend on Social Security. So there's going to be a major government fiscal crisis if market interest rates keep rising. So the Fed has to keep talking tough. If they don't, they could ultimately lose their coveted independence from Congress. So the Fed wants to keep these market interest rates down. And the only way they can do that is by talking tough and acting tough to raise interest rates to bring this inflation down, which is at 40-year highs. So what's different from 2008 is we have inflation at 40-year highs. We didn't have that problem in 2008. And we have much higher government debt levels, much higher overall debt levels, and much higher valuations for housing and for stocks. So in summary, I think we're in a recession. Probably has already started. We've certainly been in a bear market for the last year. I think the bear market has more to go, potentially 40 to 60% more downside to get back to valuation levels that would give you a 10% annual return over the next 12 years. The S&P 500 would have to fall another 60% from here down to 1600. So I think there's a lot of risk there. And I think that would lead to more downside in most commodities as well as cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. The good news is I think this all should be over hopefully sometime this year, the bear market. And then I agree with Mark, it'll be much more fun to invest in a bull market and you can invest in virtually anything. I would say particularly Bitcoin and commodities should probably outperform stocks, but you can really invest in almost anything. So as far as investing now in this bear market, the safest, easiest thing to do is just put your money in T-bills. There's ETFs like BIL or floating rate notes. There's an ETF called USFR, and those are in about 4.5% now. If you want to be more active and take more risk, you can buy inverse ETFs that rise when stocks fall. You can also trade the bear market by, you know, buying things when they're overbought, selling things when they're oversold, that kind of thing, which I go through on my website. But, you know, in the 2008-2009 bear market, the S&P fell almost 60%. A single inverse ETF rose about 90%, and a double inverse ETF rose about 180%. So if you can make, instead of just trying to break even in a bear market, if you can make a nice double digit or much better return in a bear market, and then turn around and make double digit returns in bull market, you compound your returns at a dramatic level over time. That's how you can create significant wealth.
Mark, do you want to respond to any of that?
No, I'm ready to throw in the towel and just quit my business.
Sounds a little demoralizing, I will concede.
I have to say, I guess I've been in this business for over 40 years now, and I have lots of debates with the bears, which John fits into that category. I don't know if he's a perma bear. Hopefully not.
Hopefully not.
Of the title Bull and Bear Profits. So I presume there are times when he turns bullish, although I didn't see any. Everything was short. It looks like you shorted everything last year from just looking at your list. And
No. Currently, everything is short, but I recommended several stocks and other long ETFs over the past year or so.
Oh, okay. Because I didn't see that. You know, again, I probably didn't look at the full list and so forth. But, you know, it's always a market of stocks, not the stock market per se. And so I do like the idea of looking at individual stocks, and the oil stocks did well for us last year. And gold did pretty well. Certainly did a better job than Bitcoin. We'll definitely say that. I take a very long-term perspective. And I think if you look at The Wizard of Wharton and The Stocks for the Long Run by Jeremy Siegel, you'll notice that stocks based on the S&P 500 in their worst scenario drop 50%. They seem to drop 50% during a bear market. The only exception to that is 29 to 32 when we had the Great Depression, and that's when stocks dropped 90%. And it sounds like, John, you are trying to make the case that this is going to be along the lines of the Great Depression, certainly worse than 2008 because of the high levels of debt and so forth. And historically, the only time when it has really dropped more than 50%, that was the Great Depression. As Jeremy Siegel and I, we looked at each other and we said, because we met in early 2009, and we both looked at each other, and he said, are we headed for a Great Depression? And I said, no, because the Fed is injecting incredible amounts of cash into the system, and they cut interest rates. They did the opposite of what they did in the 1930s. So the market actually bottomed out in March of 2009, and which was really one of my better calls. I must say I'm better picking the bottoms of markets than the top, and everybody has their abilities here. And maybe John's pretty good at both the tops and the bottoms of markets, but it is a very difficult thing to do because there's so many other factors out there, and you do have to look at all of these statistics. One of the things that I think we need to look at particularly pretty carefully is what the Fed will be doing, because I actually think that John is right, that we are headed for some kind of downturn, and maybe there will be a emerging market debt crisis, for example, because everything is in dollars. And I go back to the summer of 1982. So Paul Volcker had imposed a very tight money policy. We had a recession, and we didn't really have a crisis per se, even though interest rates got up to 21%. Crisis occurred finally in the summer of 1982 with the Mexican debt crisis. And when that happened, the Fed reversed course. They quickly injected liquidity, and that was the bottom of the market. And you had a 40-year bull market in bonds and stocks. And I don't think anybody predicted that it would go on that long. I certainly didn't think the bond market would last as long as it is. I do think one of the reasons that you have this disconnect between GDP growth and the stock market is because of low interest rates. I mean, if you look at a lot of these people who have been predicting a bear market are predicting it for a long time, and not just in 2022. And Robert Shiller is an example of that. With the Shiller Index, he said stocks have been overvalued for over 10 years. But everybody forgets this low interest rate scenario, which for all of us who are Austrian economists, we were all pretty shocked that you could continue to inflate the money supply, and yet interest rates stayed near zero for like 10 straight years. So these are difficult times to figure out. And I'm of the opinion that the Fed will pivot and will cut interest rates and will panic like they panicked during the lockdown and injected too much money in the system. Now they're tightening, they're too tight, and some kind of a crisis like John is predicting will probably happen in 2023, but it'll happen so the reversal of the pivot will happen so quickly that you better be fully invested, because otherwise you're going to miss a big rally in the market. Just like January, I assume, John, that you have completely missed this rally in January.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this rally has been definitely stronger than I expected. I mean, stocks are back. They're back where they were in May or so. And interest rates are much higher. Yield curve is much more inverted.
Yeah.
Money supply is down. Leading indicators are down. Clearly heading into a recession. So it's a much worse fundamental environment. And yet stocks are where they were in May. So valuations haven't changed. So that surprised me. Yes. Yeah. I mean, ultimately what matters, there's no law of economics even that tells where the stock market or financial markets go. It's ultimately in the control of investors and investor psychology. So the Fed may pivot and investors may get excited about that. They did not get excited about that at all in the early 2000s or 2008, 2009. I mean, the Fed was pivoting the entire time in those situations. The NASDAQ fell, you know, 83% in the early 2000s. The S&P fell almost 60% 2008, 2009, while the Fed was slashing interest rates and printing all kinds of money. So what really matters is investor psychology. And, you know, again, what I'm concerned about, the early 1980s, valuations were near historical lows. And we've had, as you say, a 40-year incredible bull market that brought valuations up to all-time highs. So it's just a very different environment. So in my mind, you have valuations colliding with a recession, colliding with the Fed still hiking interest rates, even though cutting interest rates didn't help in the last two major bear markets and recessions. I think that's a pretty risky situation. I mean, I certainly can't guarantee anything, but I think that's about as risky as maybe I've seen in my lifetime. I'm 52 years old now, but the Fed hiking interest rates with an inverted yield curve, with money supply already shrinking, with valuations near all-time highs, with a recession already starting, according to the Conference Board and other proven leading indicators, I think there's a lot of risk. And, you know, as far as individual stocks, I researched individual stocks for 22 years at a major investment firm. So that's what I did in my career. But if you look in the last two bear markets, early 2000s and 2008, 2009, at the lows of those, only one, I think in the early 2000s, only 3% of stocks. And in 2008, it was 1%. So 1% to 3% of stocks were trading above their 200-day moving average. So that means almost all stocks were in a downtrend below their highs at the lows of those bear markets. So it's really difficult to pick winning stocks, you know, stocks that actually go up in a bear market. So that's my concern. And yes, I agree, this will not last forever. I'm hoping this is over in 6 months. Certainly possible. The 2008 lasted about 18 months. We've already been 12 months into this. It's possible this could end as early as 6 months. On the other hand, the early 2000s bear market lasted 2.5 years, and it started about a year before the recession, which I think this one started a year ago, probably a year before the recession. So this could go on even longer. You know, we really don't know. And as far as how to identify it, I agree it's difficult conceptually, but actually, if you, to get technical a little bit, if you just look at, I look at the 250-day moving average, you can look at a 200-day moving average of, let's say, the S&P 500. And basically, when the price falls below that key moving average line, and then that moving average starts to slope downward, that's essentially the definition of a bear market. And then when the price rallies above that line, and that line typically starts heading higher, that's the definition of a new bull market. So that's ultimately what I look at to determine whether you're in a bull or a bear market.
Well, John, there was a buy signal on the 200-day moving average several weeks ago, and you can get whipsawed with these moving averages. So I know that in our own service that Jim Woods does, he uses a 200-day moving average and gave a, and he was completely out of the market pretty much in last year. So that was a really good call. And these moving averages work really well when you have a real bear market and a real bull market. But when you have the market sideways, which we have had periods, like you say, where you get whipsawed and the moving averages are not the best way to make money in this regard. I want to mention one other thing, John, that two things that we haven't mentioned. One is, how well did you do during the mother of all bull markets? We've been talking about these bear markets. You've emphasized those. But there was the mother of all bull markets that we just went through from 2009 to 2021. Best performing stock market in our history. And I was fully invested during that entire time. So I'm not the best when it comes to bear markets, do kind of dollar cost averaging, and I'm earning high dividends and biding my time and patiently waiting for the market to recover. But I'm just curious, since you do a service called the Bull and Bear Profits, what was your strategy? And did you have a cash position? Were you shorting the position anytime between 2009 and 2021?
Well, actually, I started my service about a year and a half ago. So,
oh, okay.
Wasn't in business.
You missed out on the mother of all bull markets?
Well, I actually participated in it personally. And I worked for Allianz Global Investors, a major investment firm, picking stocks. So I was picking individual stocks the entire time and hoping they went up, and they usually did because we were in a bull market. And I mean, just to point out again, I look at the 250-day moving average, which is very similar to the 200, but I look at the slope of it, and the slope was positive the entire time from mid-2009 up until early 2022. And now it's sloping downward. And so that's kind of my bottom line. And you can get whipsawed a little bit, but to go that many years with a positively sloping, or at least neutral to positively sloping 250-day moving average, that would have kept you in the bull market. And then when it slopes downward, like we've had, you know, stocks have been down over the past year with this, so it has been a bear market, then stocks could rally from here and we could start a new bull market. That's certainly possible, in which case I would shift when this slope of this 250-day moving average rises. But I can't ignore the risk. I mean, the risk is you have least what happened in 2008, 2009, given again that the Fed is still tightening, they're not easing, and we're clearly going into recession, and we had valuation levels even higher, both on stocks and on real estate. And this rise in interest rates is pretty tough for people who bought a house in 2021 and, you know, with a variable rate mortgage, they're suffering a lot of pain. So a lot of debt taken out with this quantitative easing over the past 15 years. And now people are having to pay much higher interest rates. There could be a lot of financial crises over the coming year or so if this continues. So there's just a lot of risk. I can't guarantee anything. None of us can. But with a downward sloping 250-day moving average and all these recessionary signs and the Fed tightening, I think there's a lot of risk. And I think it's going to be tough to make money on the long side unless investors just say, you know what, I don't care about a recession. There have been times when we've had recessions and stocks still went up. That was, you know, happened in the 50s, a couple times in the 20s, but valuation levels were much lower back then. So valuation levels, again, are very different now.
Well, and interest rates are still pretty low historically. That could be a factor as well. The other thing I wanted to mention, we haven't talked about the global perspective, but Asia is recovering. China is opened up. This is a key factor into what is motivating a lot of stock. Commodity stocks have made a significant rally here despite this tight money policy in the West. But we also have the East. We have China actually expanding their money supply now, opening their economy. You know, half the demand for copper comes from the Chinese demand. This is why Freeport-McMoRan, one of my favorite stocks, is almost doubled in the last 6 months. So that's a counter to your argument. It is kind of interesting how the West is tightening and raising interest rates while the Asia is reversing and being a little bit looser and expanding. And you have to weigh all of these things. Maybe that's one reason the market has rallied recently, is because China finally got their act together to realize that the world is not coming to an end with the COVID disease that they created in the first place.
No, I totally agree with you about Asia looking stronger now. The downside, unfortunately, is that that can rekindle inflation. And we're seeing easing of financial conditions, which is what the Fed looks at very closely. So you have rising commodity prices, as you said, copper and oil even a bit lately, although oil's still down 40% from its highs last year, but rising commodity prices, easing financial conditions, that's not what the Fed wants to see. I mean, the Fed has been very clear that they don't want to see that. They want to see tighter financial conditions because they have to bring this inflation down, or else, again, you're going to have a major interest rate and debt crisis at the U.S. government level, which would be bad for the Fed as an institution, which would break all of our hearts, of course. But the Fed doesn't want that. So this opening of China leading to higher, you know, better economies there, you know, China's economy didn't really go into a recession in 2008. They're not going to keep U.S. out of recession. It's already a foregone conclusion, I think, that the U.S. is going into recession. And as China opens up and you have commodity prices rising and financial conditions easing and the stock market going up, it's not what the Fed wants to see. So I think that keeps the Fed, you know, potentially raising interest rates or keeping them high for longer, which I think is the main factor that's been driving this sort of rally in this bear market rally so far, is investors hoping that the Fed, you know, will stop raising interest rates soon. But when commodity prices go up, stock prices go up, that's not what the Fed wants to see. So I think they're going to keep talking pretty tough. And every time Powell opens his mouth and talks tough, we have a pretty major sell-off. So
yeah, I've noticed that too. And that's probably going to happen on February 1st. He's going to, we listen very carefully to every word. It's all the Fed speak and what they're really saying and all this sort of thing. But never forget that the stock market is forward-looking, and if they see any indication that the Fed is pivoting and any kind of positive news out there, China opening up, that was a very positive factor. New technologies that are breaking with electric vehicles, and I mean, even Tesla is now recovering pretty sharply, by the way. That was actually in my trading service, we're up to 30%. Going long on Tesla. So there's a lot of things that are good opportunities out there. And I want to mention one other thing that I saw you were saying positive things about the VIX, and there's a major volatility and I can't see it myself. You actually lost money if you invested in VIX last year. It was actually trending down, if you can believe that. During this bear market, the VIX was actually so volatile and trending down that I don't see how you could make any money on the VIX.
I agree. I don't invest in the VIX. I don't invest in that. No,
I thought you said it was a good indicator. Maybe I misunderstood.
It's an indicator of lows and highs for trading the market. So I think what I've said lately about the VIX, I'm not sure quite what you're referring to, but that it's come way down to pretty low levels now, about 19. And that means that investors are very complacent, which I think is very risky.
Okay.
To be complacent with a recession about to start and the Fed still tightening and valuation levels at the same levels, similar levels as 2000 and 1929.
Hey folks, quick message on behalf of Movies Plus. You heard me interview Corey Tusek, who created it. And I'll say this, people on the left support each other, neocons support each other, but do we support each other? We talk a lot about the need for parallel institutions. Well, Corey has built one, so let's support it. Movies Plus is a platform that will give you all the documentaries the other platforms don't dare show you, but not just documentaries, all kinds of interesting and exciting independent programming and outstanding entertainment across a wide variety of genres. Movies Plus is fearless and uncompromising and gives you tremendous value for your entertainment dollar. Not to mention, use promo code WOODS in all caps and get yourself 20% off an annual subscription. So go check it out at mymoviesplus.com. That's mymoviesplus.com. Use promo code WOODS in all caps to get 20% off. Let me jump in here. I've been very happy to let you guys talk because the world needs more calm, cool, collected conversations between people with different perspectives. It's basically this podcast episode and almost nothing else these days. So I wanted to let you guys talk. But I want to ask Mark, maybe the first time we went out for dinner, we actually got talking about this, and you mentioned oil and gas a little while ago, and you were talking about that with me in terms of stocks that made sense to hold. And I remember being surprised at the time because I thought there's so much anti-fossil fuel propaganda, and not just propaganda, but we see action, at least the very least, being threatened, if not actually taken by various governments around the world. At some point, whatever the fundamentals are that make those stocks wise ones to hold have to give way before this barrage of anti-fossil fuel measures. So what are either of you think about fossil fuels in the long term?
Yeah, so there's actually some interesting studies that Jeremy Siegel did in Stocks for the Long Run. And it's not just oil. In fact, since 1926, one stock has outperformed all other stocks that were around in 1926. And these are big name companies. And you might think it's Coca-Cola. You might think it's IBM. You might think it's ExxonMobil and so on. But guess what? It's Philip Morris / Altria, the cigarette manufacturer, Mr. Marlboro Man. And they have overcome even worse headwinds than the fossil fuel industry. I mean, they faced billion-dollar lawsuits, a declining market, fewer and fewer people are smoking, and yet they keep increasing their dividend. And the reason they outperformed over this long period of time is low valuations. The PE ratio was so small because everybody was down on these stocks that they turned out to be really good investments, especially when you reinvest dividends. And the same thing is happening with the fossil fuels. I think we're learning, first of all, just from a practical point of view, that electric vehicles just don't perform that well still. There's still a lot of problems, and they have to be subsidized, and they don't do well during cold weather, and they're not a reliable vehicle like the hybrids and the regular fuel-injected cars. So it's not going to go away anytime soon. And the valuations are really cheap. I mean, the price-earnings ratios are quite low on fossil fuel stocks, and they're paying very high dividends. And if you reinvest those dividends, you do really well. So we have done very well with Enterprise Products, a pipeline company, an energy storage company, Cheniere Energy, which is liquid natural gas, which is very popular. So I still remain bullish. In general, you're right. You want to invest in industries that can't help but burgeon over time. But usually the stock prices are so high for those EV products. And I mean, Tesla was selling for a long period of time at over 100 times earnings. And I even confronted Elon Musk about that just in November at a conference. So I was talking to Elon Musk about the overvaluation of Tesla. But Mercedes-Benz, for example, is selling for 6 times earnings and is yielding 9%. So Mercedes-Benz is a really good investment, highly recommended. They also do EV cars, and that stock is up 20% already in our portfolio. So there's a lot of great things that you can do in this area. And you have to make a difference between the industry and the investments. They're not always, one can be negative, the other can be positive.
John, what do you think?
No, I totally agree with Mark on all of that, definitely. And I think we all understand that oil is going to be around for a long time as far as what we have to use to keep population alive and keep civilization going. So I think Mark's exactly right about that. But I will just point out, so first, I look at things on a long-term basis, on a long-term secular basis, and then on a short-term cyclical basis. And on a long-term basis, I think oil and really all commodities, virtually all commodities, are very attractively valued relative to GDP. You know, if we compare stocks to GDP, commodities are very cheap relative to GDP, relative to their history. They were incredibly cheap at the 2020 lows. And I think the 2020 lows was kind of the end of a kind of a bear market for commodities. And I think we're in the midst of a secular bull market in commodities that probably lasts, hopefully, at least another 10 years or so. Having said that, in a recession, commodities can be very weak. Oil fell 80% in essentially the second half, 2008 to early 2009, 80%, and it's still 40% below where it was in 2007. So commodities can fall a lot in a bear market. And over the past year or so, oil has fallen about 40%, while energy stocks have risen. If you look historically, that's very unusual for them to diverge like that. So I think in the near term, on a cyclical basis, I think energy is pretty risky, but I agree that long term should do very well and should outperform the overall market.
Gentlemen, can we wrap up by having each of you just take a minute to talk about, in effect, your financial products, your newsletter, your whatever it is you might do online that people can either subscribe to or go read so they can stay in touch with you and read about what you're thinking. So Mark, how about you first?
Yeah, so I write an investment newsletter, monthly investment newsletter, and got it started when the greatest president of the 20th century was elected president. So you can guess what year that was, but...
Wow, that's unbelievable. 1920. You have been going so well, long, Mark. Right.
That's your favorite. Yeah, I met Ronald Reagan. Sorry. Okay. It is the 100th anniversary of Calvin...
His death.
...or something, right?
Yeah, Harding died in 1923.
Oh, it's Harding, not Coolidge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not Coolidge, yeah.
Oh, okay. So people go to markskousen.com. That's the website for my monthly newsletter, which I've been writing since 1980. And I do a weekly hotline that people get on Monday morning. And I would like to think that I'm a seasoned investor and I've seen everything, boom and bust, bull and bear, bull markets, bear markets, crashes, and long-term bullish as long as we in the United States have adopted a free market capitalist system. That's the real question. And despite every effort by the Democrats and Republicans to destroy the free market capitalist model, they haven't been able to do it. So I have that long-term optimism that Adam Smith had, who's, by the way, celebrating his 300th birthday this year. So a lot of celebrations on Adam Smith and his laissez-faire model. And then I have four trading services that are basically short-term stock picking and option trading. And that's where we have our Tesla position and Freeport MacMoran and some of the others that have done really well. I would say that most of our investments have done well. I would say we're in good shape that 60 to 70% of our stock picks have been profitable for us. And so anyway, all of that's available at markskousen.com. And just in terms of any of my books in economics and finance, if you go to skousenbooks.com, you'll get information on how to buy my books at a discount.
Okay, John?
Okay, great. Thank you. I completely agree with Mark. And again, it's an honor to talk to him. He's been one of my heroes since I was in college. And I'm 52 now, so I'm starting about 41 years later than Mark with my website. But I'm trying to carry on the tradition promoting free markets and the long-term optimism. But I do try to incorporate the cyclical aspect of the boom and bust business cycle that I learned from Mark Skousen and Tom Woods and Meltdown and Murray Rothbard and Ludwig von Mises. So my website is called bullandbearprofits.com. Our goal is to help investors identify and profit in both bull and bear markets. And again, bull markets are easy. You can always make lots of money in bull markets. Bear markets are hard. Bear markets where the tricky part is and where you can lose a lot of money and cause a lot of stress. So I like to be able to objectively identify and profit from both. I look at hundreds of fundamental and technical indicators to assess the outlook for stocks, bonds, commodities, cryptocurrencies. Everything on my site is free right now since I'm just starting. I have a beginner's investment course. I have regular articles every week. I have webinars, free webinars, big special reports, including some economic reports that should be very interesting to free market oriented people. And every month, I recommend up to 10 new stock and ETF recommendations, individual stocks on the long side, and ETFs, both traditional long ETFs as well as inverse ETFs when I think prices are going down. So I'm not a perma bear. I'm not a perma bull. I'm a perma objective analyst trying to permanently make money. That's my goal. So come check out bullandbearprofits.com.
You know, hey, Tom, I would like to just add that this is such a great improvement. This is the best time to be alive in terms of investing. And, you know, to short the market, we used to have to borrow stock and sell it in the market, selling short individual stocks. And now you have these reverse ETFs. And I agree with John. This is the best way to play these markets. And then if you really want to make money fast, the option market is another exciting alternative. I know John's not a fan of the option market, but we find it a very valuable way to make money fast. If you want to make money fast, the option market is the best way to go. And the leverage ETFs as well. There's all kinds of ranges now that you have that are so exciting. The other thing I wanted to mention was we all have our mentors here in this business, but the economists that we have as our mentors, such as Murray Rothbard and Ludwig von Mises and others, they were, by the way, they were terrible investors. terrible investors. Murray Rothbard, for example, he denied throughout the 80s that Reaganomics would not work. And he was really down on Reagan and stuff. And the market just, it skyrocketed during the 80s and into the 90s and so forth. And so he was not a very good person to get investment advice from. You got to be very careful about pure academic economists when it comes to getting investment advice.
Well, with that, I will direct people to tomwoods.com/2274, which is where I will have links for both of you gentlemen. And my thanks both for me and I think I dare say on behalf of my listeners for this very enlightening and helpful conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
All right, everybody, before we wrap up for the weekend, let me pass on something that has absolutely nothing to do with the subject we just discussed. This one is for all the moms listening or for their husbands to pass on the information. I have a listener whose wife is a pregnancy and postpartum athleticism coach, and she specializes in pre- and postnatal exercise. Her business is Motherhood Barbell. She offers fitness coaching through pregnancy and postpartum or any season of motherhood, while also offering education and guidance for your core and pelvic health considerations. She will develop a personalized program tailored to your goals. She can do one-on-one coaching in person in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or virtually anywhere in the world. She can do a one-hour consult call where she answers all your questions regarding exercise during pregnancy or postpartum and a whole lot more. So check it out. Motherhoodbarbell.com is the website. That's motherhoodbarbell.com. And remember, if you are thinking of starting a website, before you start it, check out tomwoods.com/publicity for how I can help you for not one extra cent get a whole bunch of eyeballs on that website, including promotion on my podcast and other goodies. But you got to check them out before you start the site. The page, once again, is tomwoods.com/publicity. See you soon.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.